Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, Silent Philly on the ones and twos. Our special guest today, Sherry.
Someone you're going to be hearing a lot about.
Dayton. I was trying to figure out, do I introduce her as Dayton mayor or Ohio gubernatorial candidate? I introduce her as both. The Dayton mayor, Ohio gubernatorial Democratic candidate, Nan Whaley. Looking forward to having Nan. I haven't talked to Nan in a while, and looking forward to having her join us here in a few minutes. Cher. But first, we're recording this. Actually, we're doing an evening record right now. We usually do a morning, and I looked over at Cher thinking she was going to say something. And
all right, here's a secret about Jason.
How are we looking?
All right, this is – some of you know this if we call you for stories. I am a morning person, and Jason Williams is a night person, which works. If you have news tips in the morning, you call me. I'm serious. I get up at like 4:30, and I know which one of all of you also get up at 4:30, actually, and I will start talking on the phone then. And then Jason, he's just the night guy. Like, we'll be talking, and I'll be like, I'm falling asleep. No offense.
I'm just hitting my – prime here at as we record here at 6:45 p.m. on a Tuesday. And Sherry, I know you can tell the difference in my energy level right now.
I can't.
The coffee
actually
has well kicked in by now, the three cups of coffee by this time.
All right. But here's what we're going to do. So Jason's going to – he's going to do all the heavy lifting here. We are, as I was reminded by every single person I talked to today, 1 week out from the mayor's primary.
Woohoo!
How did that even happen? I don't know.
There's a mayor primary?
Six candidates. Two are going to advance.
I'm joking.
All right, and we got issues 1, 2, and 3, and yes, there aren't issues 1 and 2. That was kind of a big thing today, but it turns out if you have an issue 3 on the ballot, guess what? You also have an issue 1 and 2.
But doesn't guarantee an issue 4, though, right?
Exactly. Are you kidding? With everything with issue 3, I can't take another issue, so thank God. All right,
we got issues with issue 3.
We're going to break it down. I'm going to ask Jason the questions.
Sorry, I should say I have issues with it.
And he is going to get out his crystal ball. Are you ready?
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Okay.
You're gonna make me get a crystal ball out for a field race primary, huh?
Yes, because I don't know what's going to happen, and I want to know, and I think you know.
Go ahead.
All right, go on. Who's getting through?
You know, I've been asking this question a lot, Sherry. I know you have, too. And the response that I've gotten from multiple people who pay close attention to this stuff are like, you know, I think the general thought is that Aftab Purival gets through and wins.
The name ID is there.
ID is there. And then it is a flip the coin. And again, this is not based on polling. I think this is just based on people observing it. I'm sure some people seeing polling as well. But it's a flip the coin on David Mann and Cecil Thomas. I think if you were forcing me to give you an answer right now, a week out at this point, and again,
I am.
If you're forcing me to give you an answer, my gut tells me that it's a Aftab Purival and David Mann get through in the field race with Cecil Thomas, you know, finishing, I think, a close third to the second place person. But do you want me to pick one and two?
I was actually not going to make you do
David
that.
Mann, and a close third, I believe, was Cecil Thomas. And then I don't know how the other three would shake out. But and it's a field race, and the top two go on. So it doesn't matter if you finish first or second. I don't think, because we look back at 2017.
That's right.
And Yvette Simpson finished first in the primary. John Cranley, the incumbent,
only served
second
to energize him.
And you know, it's interesting to think that had he finished first, he probably—I don't know—probably is not the right word, but there's a good chance he may not have been the mayor, because him losing was a wake-up call. He had to completely transform his approach. Obviously, we don't have an incumbent this time. Cranley is termed out. And so there's not going to be like a wake up call in that way, like how the finish, the top two finishers are. But I really expect whoever comes out, Aftab and David Mann, or Aftab and Cecil Thomas, or there's some people that think Cecil Thomas and David Mann. I haven't heard that a lot. I heard that more about a month ago. I haven't heard that a lot.
When you see the money and the apparatus,
yeah,
like it's just a piece of things. And, you know, there's been a lot said of like, that's not everything. No, it isn't everything, but no, it's something.
You're right.
It's something. And Aftab, he did raise the most money. You were looking at a report of a person running to be the mayor,
yes,
of the third largest city in Ohio. And not even like what we saw in the past, just, you know, like with these $1 million races, because he didn't raise that much money. But we did, you know, we were looking at someone who was taking this very seriously on every single level, from raising money to spending that money to, yep, knocking on doors to, yep, talking about issues. So we're like, we really saw like what a race looks like there.
I think more another just sort of beyond the crystal ball, but the assessment of this race so far is it's been a very low-key campaign across the board, for campaigns across the board so far. Fully expect that to be different, though.
You know,
going
what?
Into
I have to tell you, it better be different, because the citizens deserve more than being quiet and trying to slip through into the mayor's,
agreed,
seat. Like at this time in the city's history, that is not what leadership looks like. It has been very quiet. Today was really, you know, one of the first times David Mann sent out some emails. I got one from Rafael Prophet today, really, you know, cementing his support for issue 3. And so kind of trying to define himself that way and make it pick an issue, right? And do that. And I just, there hasn't been a lot of that. It's been a lot of wishy-washy on the issues. And it's going to be time to talk to citizens and say where you're taking the city in the future.
Correct. And I think there has been a, you know, I got to say this about the three candidates, the three top candidates, Puraval, Mann, Thomas. I could see the argument being made that all three of them would be a solid mayor. And, you know, so far, and again, I don't know. Like, I've not seen a vision, really strong vision for the future cast by any of the candidates so far. But on the flip side, I know I say that I think that any of the three candidates there could really end up being very good mayor. And it's just kind of a weird, and that's the word I've heard people use. It's kind of a weird race so far. Is that? And there's lots of theories on why that it's just sort of been so low key. Is that people are just fatigued out of the pandemic? It is an off year anyway. Are people just so tired after 2020 and that election? Not in addition to the campaign or the pandemic, but man, gosh, we felt like we ran a marathon with the 2020 presidential election. And I think that people kind of this spring with the weather turning nice, I've sort of felt like, oh, this is the first real opportunity in a year and a half to kind of get a breather from all this, like take a break from all this stuff.
One of the main lessons we have learned, and then we'll turn to the issues, is, you know what is true about the mayor's race? 4 years is a long time. And the council race, too. We have had four long years at City Hall.
Yes.
And so people need to remember they're making a decision for the next 4 years, and remember just how long 4 years is. All the council terms 2 years, but this mayor is going to be there for 4 years. And so just remember how long 4 years is.
And you had a story of the day, which you talked about changing of the guard. Whether people want change or not, it's coming. And there's only one person who's going to be currently on council who's running again, who ran. There's only one current council member who was on the ballot in 2017,
correct,
who will be on the ballot this year, and that's Greg Landsman. New mayor. Obviously, it'll be a new council. But I want to make this point, too, and this is maybe inside baseball. But one thing I am noticing, and it's been maybe a subtle thing. It's been a little under the radar. But I will say this. You look at the money AFTAB raised, and what, do you have that on top of your head? What, how much he raised? Is it one?
I'm going to go 200,000.
Okay. I can't remember the story. Sorry, I don't have the story in front of me. But he outraised the whole field.
Yes.
And you dig deep into his donors. He's cultivated a lot of new donors. And I'll tell you, he's got a whole new campaign operation around him, new campaign manager. And I'll tell you, he's going to be tough to beat in the general election. He seems to be doing other than, again, being out there leading the charge on a vision and on, you know, but some of that behind the scenes things that I think were biting him, you know, really hurting him last time in that 2018 congressional race. So far, I mean, he's, you know, mistake free and clearly a long way to go. And it's a different ball game and a head to head race. But I think he's going to be tough to beat in the end. Do I need to say anything else about this race here?
No, we're good.
Let's get on to May 4th and Tuesday. Right?
Yes, on the mayor's race. Issues. I'm going to say something about issues 1 and 2.
The issues.
They both can.
Totally forgot about that.
Voters can vote for both of them. They both deal with, you know, kind of this anti-corruption at City Hall, and they deal with the aftermath of what happens if a council member is arrested. You know, one of them calls for a special prosecutor to come in and kind of handle things. So there's no conflict of interest. There's some ethics training. And then you see also the suspension being able to happen in-house with 7 members of council being able to, you know, suspend somebody with pay after they have been arrested. Do you think more people are going to get arrested? Like, these are 2 issues that literally deal with the aftermath of the worst moments in our city history. And they're like planning for it in the future. That's what issues 1 and 2 are.
I commend Betsy Sunderman and Vice Mayor Christopher Smitherman for putting those 2 issues forward, one on one and the other one on the other issue. I get confused on the numbers, so I'm not even going to go there. But you're right, Sherry. Like, they deal with the illness after the fact, and that's not a criticism of the 2 council members who put those forward. Kudos to them, actually. It's like, who else wants to join them and sort of trying to put something together? And that's been sort of been critical of it, is that where is the robust effort that, you know, the types of effort that we saw around the bus levy last year, the types of effort that we saw around Preschool Promise a few years ago, where's been that kind of more robust community-wide effort to get behind ridding corruption out of City Hall? It's not been there. And it's honestly, Sherry, and you and I have talked about this, and I think it's really kind of too late now, even for the November ballot, because the process really isn't even underway. And so you're going to start the process, get it on the ballot, get everybody on board and get it on the ballot for November. Things don't happen that quickly. And that's unfortunate.
All right, tell me. All right, this is it. Issue 3 is the hottest issue. It's more talked about than the mayor's race. There seems to be more interest in it. Is the affordable housing charter amendment going to pass? It calls for at least $50 million a year to be put towards affordable housing. A lot has been said about how the heck the city's going to pay for that, cuts or increases in other places. Is it going to pass, Jason?
No. I do not think it's going to pass because both major parties have come out against it. The Democrats, the Republicans,
and the charter
have all 3 city parties, parties in the city have come out against it. That's a strong united front right there. In addition to many individual Democrats, Republicans, and charterites who have come out against it, there's been a lot of money put behind fighting it. A very bipartisan effort here. You rarely see this. And, you know, Jared Camras, Democratic consultant and strategist, Cody Rizzuto, a Republican consultant and strategist, have come together to run, you know, the day-to-day and the nitty-gritty of the campaign. And it's just, you don't see this happen very often. And
no, those flyers aren't going to write themselves.
No. And so I really believe that this is one of those, we talk about kind of the lack of, you know, a rallying around a, you know, whole anti-corruption thing. Well, there has been a rallying around of our stakeholders around fighting against this.
I'm saying this isn't the best option to deal with it. I would like to see like the real plan of what if they think that this isn't it, like we're going to need to see a real plan. But they're not. It's this very nuanced no on three. Yes, we need affordable housing. No, this isn't it. Is there kind
I'm
of
glad you
their
brought
premise?
That up. You know, I'm glad
premise.
You brought that up because as we're sitting here talking, affordable housing has gotten really pushed to the side. That is a serious issue. I've had lots of conversations with Republicans and Democrats who all equally say this is a very important issue. I just had – I had a beer with one of the state lawmakers last week or a couple weeks ago. He was telling me – I mean, he brought it up himself how really important it is, how he hopes that maybe even the state lawmakers would start to take a look at it. I was really taken aback. By the fact that, oh, wow, this is a Republican saying this. This is a, and then so I started asking around. I've heard other Republicans think, yeah, this is an important issue that needs to be addressed. This is not the way to do it. And this is the lack of a, again, going back to the lack of a broader discussion that's been put around this is very concerning. When we want to get things done around here, again, we've had a couple really good recent examples with the bus levy, the preschool promise. You can see things can be really successful. And I think the preschool promise has been so far successful. It's still pretty early on the bus thing. But I think this could be, at the very least, this fails and it's a wake-up call for the influencers and politics and business and the folks who are on the front lines of fighting poverty, get together and say, look, we really got to do something about this. And Sherry, you and Dan Horn have written so much about this issue. You've written about other cities and how they do it right. Columbus, for example, they have a robust fund there where the business community and the developers and the political leaders are all on the same page. And it's funded and it's robustly funded. And, you know, I know I'm getting going because this is some serious stuff here because you blow a $50 million hole in the city's annual operating budget of a $400 million plus budget, Sherry. That's a serious remaking of the annual budget. And this is not hyperbole. We had Matt Alter from the fire union on a few weeks ago. This isn't hyperbole. That these things are going to have to be cut. The basic services, public safety, things like that are going to have to be cut. Some of the people who are behind issue three, they want that. And that's unfortunate because I think we can all agree that affordable housing is very important of an issue, but not at the expense of basic services, our safe streets, you know, having our EMTs and firefighters respond in a quick manner, our 911, 911 calls answered.
This all gets to the first thing we were just talking about. The next mayor is not a normal time. The next mayor is coming in. There's going to be new council members, you know, there's a distrust in City Hall, and they're going to have to balance poverty, this affordable housing issue, growing the city, making the city seem welcoming to developers. Because, you know, it turns out it hasn't seemed that welcoming to the developers behind the scenes.
That's right.
And so, like, that's a lot of things on this next mayor's plate. And so it gets right back
no
to
doubt.
Who that person's going to be.
And I think, and speaking of, you know, all three of the main mayoral candidates have come out against issue three, but they've all said this is an important issue. I've noticed in Aftab Puraval's campaign ads, he talks about it. And let me tell you, there's a Cincinnati Business Committee, Cincinnati Regional Business Committee, you know, otherwise known as generically the business community, have done polls, and affordable housing has polled pretty high. And the theory, I think, is that because it's in the media a lot. And so, yeah, it's certainly an important issue that will have to be dealt with ultimately one way or the other after May 4th, next Absolutely. Tuesday. One more quick thing, Sherry, and this is, and you know, we can probably talk more about this later, but that's $50 million that's coming out of the budget that starts July 1st, the city's fiscal.
Or
is that correct?
They can raise fees and taxes elsewhere.
Yeah.
And you can put it on the backs of developers.
Yeah. Anyway, we got rolling there. Should we?
It's a topic worth getting rolling on, I have to say. All right, come. We do have a special guest. Let's switch over. You know, it's not 2022 yet, but it seems like it.
And let's bring on Nan Whaley. All right, special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast, and very pleased to welcome to the podcast the mayor of Dayton and brand new gubernatorial candidate, Nan Whaley. Nan, how are you?
I'm good, Jason. Hi, Sherry. Great to be on.
Thanks for, you know, squeezing us in. It's a busy schedule when you launch a campaign. I would yep. say it's kind of like a wedding. We're like right out of the gate. There's all these things you have to do, book a venue, you know, get the caterer, and then there's a lull. But I feel like there's not going to be a lull at all.
No, I think we've been super busy, you know, for over a week now, and it's been great. And, I've been really overwhelmed by the support we've gotten across the state and the grassroots excitement across the state about the campaign. So it's been great so far.
What's and I know this you were running in 2018, Nan, and you know you dropped out of that race, but this is something you've really had your eyes on for a while now. Talk about why you really are passionate about running for governor.
Well, I think the issue for me on governor is it's a lot like a mayor, and I, you know, love the work of seeing if you do it right, you can see that you've got something done. It's very pragmatic. Jason, you know, I've always thought state and local government is where the real impact to people's lives can be made.
And definitely.
And what I've seen particularly that keeps on driving me to Columbus is I just see over and over again, the same political crew making the same mistakes at higher levels because they're so interested in their political self-dealing. And it gnaws at me as someone that's, you know, working really hard to move a community forward that, you know, these folks in Columbus are more self-interested about their political interests and lining their political pockets than, you know, the issues that I see in my community where people, you know, have to work two jobs to make ends meet. They're working longer and longer hours, and they don't know if their kids are going to be able to stay in their communities. And I just think that the state can be so much more if we had real leadership in the governor's office.
I mean, covering City Hall really made me realize, like, a mayor affects an actual person's life. Like, it understands what's going on in neighborhoods. Because people were like, oh, Pete Buttigieg, he can't run for president. He's just a mayor. I'm like, not just a mayor. A mayor works 24, like, you, it doesn't matter what political party. When you're a mayor, you work 24 hours a day, and you're fixing problems 24 hours a day.
Right. And I think the mayor's a special position because you can see on the ground what's happening, but you also have to be visionary for your community at the same time. So, you know, look, we're the ones that get the text in the middle of the night when something doesn't go right in a community. But we're also the ones that have to say, okay, where are we going as a city in the next 20 years? And I think that makes the position so special. And it's very telling, you know, that we see three former mayors as cabinet members because they get that visionary, but get what needs to happen on the ground at the same time.
So, I mean, the joke kind of has been, though, like, well, who's going to run for governor on the Democrat side? And that the idea that no Democrat can, you know, beat like this juggernaut of Republicans in statewide office. And it's kind of like it's been talked about like lining up to lose to DeWine. Tell me why that's not true. Tell me why that's not true.
Well, look, I certainly think that we can win this race. I think of Ohio not really as a red or a blue state. but as a state that's very frustrated with its political leadership. And that nowhere is that more true than at the state house. I mean, this latest issue of what DeVilliers, who is a Southern District U.S. attorney appointed by Trump, has called the largest scandal in Ohio history is appalling. You know, a $60 million racketeering scandal where people have been indicted and to bail out a company that can afford to put their names on name on the side of the Brown Stadium. And you and I are paying on our electric bill every month for that bailout. If that doesn't get you frustrated, I don't know what would as an Ohioan. And I think that is the kind of stuff we just continue to see at the state house. And it seems like it just keeps on ratcheting up. First, it was, you know, the coin gate. Then it with the Beanie Babies. Then it was ECOT with the electronic classrooms of tomorrow. And it's like, well, let's see if we put it on their electric bill, if they'll take that. And I think that it's just so frustrating to Ohioans, you know, that their government is not working for them. And that is, I think, the big difference in this race. And, you know, I think Ohioans are hungry for leadership that really cares about what's going on every single day. And I think that will resonate.
Nan, you've had plenty of opportunities, or there's options out there. U.S. Senate, the congressional district right there as well. And is it that really roll up your sleeves mentality you talked about that a mayor has that you would really have to have in the governor's office? Is that really what's kind of directed you toward governor more so than going those other, you know, direct going to Washington?
Yes. You know, look, I, as you know, Jason and Sherry, I like the work where you can make impact. And I like the idea that Ohioans do deserve better in that governor's seat. And I think, you know, this is a state that keeps it pretty real. And isn't as interested in what like is going on nationally, but knows what's happening to their pocketbook. And it's pretty straightforward about the issues that concern them, which are the same ones that drive me. And I think the place you can make the most impact in that is in the governor's seat.
Yeah. I guess, you know, one of the challenges in this state is, you know, rural and small town. I've written quite a bit about it and Democrats reaching voters in those areas. And I've had quite a few Democrats mention to me, you know, that the party as a whole needs to do a better job of reaching those voters. Any thoughts on, you know, I know you're just getting going with the governor's race, but any thoughts on how you can connect and reach voters in, you know, the eastern and southern and rural pockets of Ohio?
Well, first, you know, I, and you know this, I'm from a more rural area, even more, you know, of Indiana, and got to Dayton as quickly as I could. You know, I think I understand their frustration in their communities. I understand. I don't really view it as like a Democratic message or a Republican message. I view it as an issue of everybody has forgotten about them. Mm-hmm. And coming from Dayton, that's not one of the three big cities. I can relate to that because we have seen incredible disinvestment in these communities and nobody's done anything for them. The state, like I said, what's the state interested in? How can I line my political pockets? How can I, you know, make sure that I'm taken care of? And we haven't really seen the kind of investment in these small communities that really needs to happen.
I'm from Youngstown. Yeah. And when we started seeing that was really going to be the Mahoning Valley was going to be red, and I would go home to visit my parents who live there and see a decline from even a decline after the steel mills closed, right? Like to see the continued decline, and people are like, oh, they would never vote for Trump there. That's a union blue workers. And yet here they are voting for Trump. But I see – like that is a message that I think would be hard – that is spot on – that does need to be said and heard there. But I'm wondering how much they'll listen because they voted for Trump because they haven't seen any change in so long.
And you can understand their frustration with any government then, right? If they haven't seen change, we haven't seen change in our communities for so long that obviously you would come away with no one cares about my community. And, you know, my point is, like, the Republicans have been in charge for three decades in Columbus, and they haven't done anything for these communities. We just got the census announcement, you know, this week, and we saw we've lost another congressional seat in Ohio. And it's because the focus isn't on how do we make sure we keep our talent and keep our young people in our state. It's I want to make sure that I'm doing what's politically expedient for me in Columbus. And that's my point. Like, I think there is huge opportunity to talk about, and to act on what folks need. And it is not hard. You know, we did the Industrial Revolution. We started this work in Ohio. We can build it here too, still, you know, when we talk about the next revolution of jobs and ideas. And if the Republicans for three decades had ideas, wouldn't we have seen them by now about what to do about this disinvestment in communities across Ohio? I mean, where have they been?
That's a great question. I want to ask you this, and you know, you and John Cranley have been genuine friends and have had a really strong relationship. You came in to your mayor's offices respectively around the same time, and how's that going to look? You and him running in this primary, and you know, we asked him last week, and I think you know Laura Bischoff asked you as well, and now that you're a week into it, how's that going to go? For lack of a better way of asking, how's that going to go?
Well, you know, John is a friend of mine, and we have worked together on a multitude of issues for our communities. And we have, you know, obviously we have very different leadership styles. We come from a little bit of different places, but I think this is all going to be fine because I think, you know, I'm focused again on the general election and the three decades of just sheer self-interest that's been going on in Columbus. And so I'm sure, you know, I made the joke, Jason, with Laura and with you guys too. You know, you guys have the best chili. I believe we have the best pizza. It will all be fine.
is there...
What is your message that's different? Where do you... Because if you look at things on the whole, right, the same kind, you know, these cities that are growing, attracting young people, how are you different than John Cranley?
I think we're very similar in a lot of ways. We come from a bit of different places. I think the challenges that Dayton has been through, particularly in the past 2.5 years, have really changed me into, you know, a real hunger and intensity to want to make sure that we have real help in the state house. And, you know, we just see this over and over again in mid-sized and smaller communities where you really are on your own. And I don't think it should have to be that way. I don't think we should be having a state house that has animosity to rural areas, animosity to urban areas, really animosity to any part that's not the Capitol Square state house. And I think, you know, that is really driven in me from the past 8 years of fighting for Dayton every single day.
You know, one issue, and again, your campaign's just getting going. Cranley has not officially launched his campaign, though he's been raising money for a year. And so I only say this because it's one of the issues that I know, because he said it right here on this podcast, in terms of a statewide issue. And so it's one of the things I know where he stands, and I think it's only fair to ask where you stand. He said on this podcast back in the fall that he supports fracking in eastern Ohio, and I know that's certainly in the 2020 presidential campaign that was a hot topic.
He brought it up. We didn't
he brought
even
it
ask
up, right.
Like, that's not like a that's so Cincinnati question. So what do you think about fracking? But since he brought right. it up, we do want to ask you.
Yes. That's just one issue of many, but I know that's somewhere he's taken a stand so far, and so give you the opportunity to what's your take
sure.
on that?
Sure. Look, I believe we need an all of the above approach to energy, but we need to regulate the process to make it safer for the communities where it's happening. We've seen where this, you know, discharge from Pennsylvania has come in actually to Ohio. We're not even receiving the benefit because we don't have the regulations, particularly on the discharge of fracking, which I think is really, really important. But particularly, I'm really focused on making Ohio a leader for the next industrial revolution, like I mentioned, you know, which is focused on new technologies. And, you know, one of the areas that we've really pushed as mayors on is this Marshall Plan for Middle America. And it's this whole idea as where the fossil fuel jobs are, the new jobs for new energy sources must be invested there. And we've really worked with the Ohio River Valley mayors about this issue because it is so important, because we've seen this mistake over and over again. Sherry, you mentioned Youngstown with steel. We saw it in steel. It was like, well, steel is over. We're just going to go elsewhere. We saw it again in manufacturing. I saw it in manufacturing here in Dayton and along the I-75 corridor. You know, we have the ability to really make high quality products here. And that is what Ohio does. And so we have to make sure that we're intentional about these good paying jobs being in the places where the fossil fuel energy industry has been. I think that's really, really important, both to Ohio's future and to the future of the country, frankly. And what we see now in the State House again, and this is, I mean, this goes back, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but this first energy scandal, it goes back to, you know, them pulling out the renewable energy sources to get that investment for good paying jobs because it didn't help them politically. And that's my point. You know, these guys are more interested in how it just helps them like a dark money dollar into their campaign than they are about what would be best for Ohio's future and the people of Ohio's future and those communities' future. And they missed that mark over and over and over again in Columbus.
I want to ask you one more Cranley question, unless Sherry wants to ask you a Cranley related question. And that's you both have said, I can't remember what Cranley said, but you know, a lot of respect for you, and you've said it's fine. Have you both agreed that like you're not going to attack each other? When you say fine, does that mean you're going to go at it, you know, hard on the campaign trail, but at the end of the campaign, you shake hands and whoever loses, endorses the other? When you say fine, what do you mean by that?
I just think I think our eye is on the ball about next November, not necessarily next May for both of us. And so that's why I'm just not very concerned about that issue. I think our friendship will survive. I'm not concerned about it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we, at least I am, I know I am focused on next November and next November only.
So on that vein, though, when I'm looking at both of the cities, you both, and I, obviously from this conversation, and if you talk to John Cranley, too, this House Bill 6, I mean, you're hitting all the points, and people, I think it is going to resonate with voters on just how corrupt that
was. I would hope so. I mean, it is.
But I mean, you do still see Larry Householder, you know, just going to work every day. And mm-hmm. So sometimes you think maybe it won't resonate. But I think that, right. You know, clearly that's going to be part of this race. But you both have had to contend with city council members who have been arrested on corruption charges. People who are working under your same roofs. I mean, can you talk a little bit about, like, how this has happened in our cities?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think corruption is unacceptable anywhere. And I was heartbroken and disappointed when this happened in Dayton. And when it did happen, we faced it head on, changed our rules, changed our processes to make sure that it could not happen again. But let's compare that to what's happening on in Columbus. You know, Governor DeWine says these people that have had their houses raided are good people and have done nothing wrong. Like that, you have to face this stuff head on. It is about trust in government, and corruption anywhere is completely unacceptable. And what I have been shocked by is just how everybody thinks it's business as usual in Columbus. And that is incredibly troubling, because what that tells you is everybody is comfortable because they have all been there for decades and they benefit from it. Because you don't see an ethics reform coming out of the governor's office. You don't see more transparency in the light of day. As a matter of fact, just last week, we saw a voter suppression bill come out of complete darkness. No one even knows who wrote it. We don't know who writes the bills that come out of the Legislative Service Commission. It could be whatever lobbyist has supported the state legislature to do that. There is a complete overhaul that is needed in Columbus. And I think DeWine is too weak to do it and won't stand up to the extremists in his party to make that happen. And that is why we continue decade after decade to see scandal on top of scandal on top of scandal, where they outdo themselves every single cycle on it. And I believe Ohioans are frustrated. I believe Ohioans have had enough with this.
Let me ask you this question. Is there a strong enough Democratic bench in this state to seriously go and challenge the other seats, you know, for attorney general, for secretary of state? Do you think we're going to see, like, you because of the adversity that you've had to go through, and I was up in Dayton and watched you personally handle the aftermath of the shootings, and I consider that one of my hardest reporting days of my life, and watched you handle it with grace and just – real leadership.
I concur.
And
thank
so,
you.
But who's going to be at your side saying, okay, these things on the Democrat side aren't okay in Columbus? Are there strong candidates all the way along the line?
Yeah, absolutely. And sure, I think you saw this too during your time here in Dayton. That's what we've done here, is bring people together, have people step up in leadership. And there are amazing elected leaders that you might not hear about because, and I don't think people know who all the state legislatures are either. We know them. But I think there are amazing community members and leaders that are really focused on the issues that matter in their community and would be great at doing this work statewide. I hope to be on a ticket that is the most inclusive and diverse in Ohio history. I think that's what we need. And we need people that aren't from Capitol Square in the ruling class that is okay with same old, because that is not getting it done for Ohioans. I mean, if it was working, if our communities were thriving, if we weren't losing population, if people's wages were going up and their bills were going down, fine. But that is not the case. And every single issue that we are measured at, Ohio gets further and further behind. I think that means we really need some new leadership. And there are hungry Democratic elected leaders across this state, I think, ready to step up.
Man, we'd like to have our guests tell a little bit about themselves and yeah, I know we've been kind of intense conversation about.
You've been very intense today, so it's been fun.
But we you know, want to give you an opportunity. Like, you're the mayor of Dayton, and you grew up in Indiana. And how the heck did you get into politics?
Well, I went to the University of Dayton as a chemistry major. You know, I'm a first generation college graduate, and you know, families that are first generation college grad a lot of times say, like, you know, major in science or major in business. But my parents also said, well, you're going to Ohio where they decide presidents, and made it really clear to me that the reason why I even got to go to the University of Dayton was because of the access to student loans that Bill Clinton opened up. And so they, you know, it was like 94, and I started volunteering here in Dayton for Bill Clinton's reelection for president. And that opened up a whole new world to me in the city of Dayton, where I got to meet people that were in local government and active in the community. And I really fell in love with this city. You know, Dayton is a place, I call it a Goldilocks town. It's not too big. It's not too small. It's very gritty and working class, which I also love, because people believe that if they work hard and they play by the rules, their families should get ahead. And too often now in Ohio and across our country, that is not the case, but that is what we should all aspire to be.
And your mom and dad also live in suburban Cincinnati. And
yeah,
how did the family all end up? You guys all were from Indiana, and how'd you guys all end up in Southwest Ohio? Well, I know how you did. Like, how did your parents end up coming here?
I like to think we're good leaders. You know, we're trying to increase the population of Ohio by the Whaley family. But my brother and married his college sweetheart, and he has two kids that go to Hyde Park Elementary School. And when their grandchildren are there, you know, that seems to move grandparents. And my parents moved here 8 years ago to be near the grandchildren. And it's been great because, you know, Wyoming is about 45 minutes from Dayton, from where I live, and about 15 minutes from where David lives, my brother. And so I'm able to go have dinner with my parents every Friday. It's been just awesome. We're a very close-knit family. And so I'm in Cincinnati, you know, or Cincinnati area every single weekend. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, so it's very nice.
Favorite places to go? Where do you like to go when you're here?
I like to go to, there's this breakfast place that I think it's called like CCW, right in Wyoming.
Cooking and then with there's Caitlin, the, yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
And the sisters are owners. They're like so friendly, so wonderful. And they also have the barbecue place right on the square in Wyoming.
Station.
We eat there. What's that called, Jason?
Station.
Yes. Yes.
Cooking with Caitlin is the, that's like her. Yeah.
CWC, Cooking with Caitlin. That's right. Yeah. And then the station right in the Dora there in Wyoming. And then, you know, like we do hit Skyline regularly. There's like a Skyline on Wyoming that's kind of like a house. And that's our regular stop with my niece and nephew.
I will say one of my favorite moments with Jason does actually involve you. And it was the after. He doesn't know what I'm going to say.
I'm like, my eyes are like, uh-oh.
Just so he and I, when Trump did come to visit after the shooting, right? It's a very serious day. So, I mean, please, I do understand that. So it's a very serious day. We go, you know, to the right pad. We covered this visit. Yep. And then Jason's driving, my coworkers, I'm always like, you drive. And I'll be texting in the passenger seat. And I was on Twitter and we were headed back to Cincinnati. And I'm like, turn the car around. Nan Whaley's in a Twitter whore with Trump. We're going to Dayton. And he did. We like made a U-turn on the highway.
No, Neil, I think to add to that story, I dropped you off because I believe I came back. You were caught a ride back with our photographer. And I drove back and I think I stopped at the outlet malls there. And I'm watching this all unfold on Twitter. And then I wrote a column about you for the weekend, just saying how great you handled it and with grace. But like that was just insane. Like I remember we were all there for your press conference at Dayton City Hall. And then, you know, you guys, like we were all right there and you were all like very, you were all very respectful of the president and things were publicly, you and Sherrod Brown. And sure, the next thing you know, it's like, well, this guy's like creating some firestorm. I'm not asking you to get in on all that, but it was just, yeah. I mean, you're already dealing, you're grieving for your city. And then that happens. Right. It's truly like.
And having visited real people.
Well, I'm honored that I'm part of one of your favorite memories with Jason Sherry. I'll hold that dear. But look, I mean, I think as a mayor, like if you need to, you must stand up for your community no matter what. And that's really was my guiding force that entire week. And look, I mean, you know, Sherry, you said it was the hardest, you know, reporting days. It was the hardest day of my life. None. I mean, it was incredibly difficult, but the support and love I saw from my community is something I'll never forget. And I'm very, very honored that I got the opportunity to lead my community during its toughest times.
It's great. Nan, just really, I know you're got to run and you're busy on the campaign and obviously, and you're still running the city of Dayton as well. And
you're right.
Can't thank you enough for joining us here today and just really appreciate it.
Oh, it's great to talk to you guys. Appreciate all you do and all your covering of statewide politics. And thanks for thinking about, as I like to say, the folks in Cincinnati, thanks for thinking about Dayton like once a week.
Thanks, Nan.
All right. Talk to you later.
Thanks again to Nan Whaley. Always enjoy talking with her and hadn't caught up with her in a while. So it's great to really appreciate her joining us here on the podcast. And that brings us to Nan's talking about the Wyoming skyline, which is my second favorite skyline next to the Clifton skyline.
I know. I've never heard you talk about that one. I'm like, what is she talking about? You would think I would know about it. I'm friends with you.
Yes. The Wyoming skyline is my second favorite next to the Clifton skyline. So the Clifton skyline.
I mean, just, that's the famous skyline. Yeah.
That is not our So Cincinnati moment of the week, by the way. So we're staying away from chili today.
No, it might be mine next week. You know why? The Delhi skyline got remodeled.
Oh, yeah.
Jack Coolidge is like, oh, we have to go in there. I mean, in my head, I'm like, well, how different could it be? But I guess we'll find out.
Yes, we will.
It'll never be the Clifton one. Ooh, I'm sorry, everyone at Delhi, but still.
How's this for Cincinnati, Sherry? The daughter of the owner of Price Hill Chili married the owner of the Delhi skyline.
Wow.
There's your little Cincinnati.
All right. There we go.
How about that?
All right.
How are we looking? Is that our Cincinnati moment of the week, Philly? Is it? I kind of had a kind of Cincinnati moment of the week.
I think that's the moment.
That's the moment? Great. We've covered a lot here today. And I think it's time to go.
All right.
Sherry, I'm just
we have a lot of stories to write before the primary.
Yes, we do. Sherry, I'm just raring to go. Like, it's like 7 o'clock at night.
I know.
I need lunch. I need to eat lunch. It's time to eat lunch. Thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you next week.